This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome to Ladies Who London podcast. I'm Emily Dell.
And I'm Alex Lacey, and we are qualified London Blue Badge tourist guides.
Each week we bring to you some of the best bits of London.
We talk about our favourite people, places and events with a bit of information, a lot of laughs and a whole lot of fun.
We can be found on Instagram at Ladies Who London podcast and on our websites guideemily.com
and alexlacey.com and ladieswholondon.com. For more information about our upcoming walking tours and virtual tours, as well as what the Blue Badge guiding qualification is all about.
Boom, boom.
I did it. And I'm back.
You're back, baby.
I am mostly recovered. I mean, honestly, how ridiculous is this? You go and have a baby and don't even take a week off. I get a little bit of a cough and I'm like, no, I can't do the podcast. I'm going to die.
Oh, mate. Shall I... No, I was going to suggest that I play the recording that you sent me, the voice message on WhatsApp, because your voice, it gone.
I had a chest infection and it was not pleasant, and it's still lingering a little bit, but I sound a little bit like a man today, but we're going to power through anyway.
I'm for it. You sound great.
I can't laugh because it makes me cough, so this is going to be a fun one.
Oh, but you look well.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I look a lot better than I did last week, I tell you that much. Oh, well, but thank you so much to Lottie and Fiona for covering so fantastically and very last minute as well, bless them. They were roped in at the last moment to take over from me on my deathbed. So thank you so much, ladies, for doing a sterling job. And it was a great episode.
Oh, they were so much fun. And
I'm slightly worried I'm out of a job now.
of course not, Lacey.
Yeah, it was a lovely one. I really enjoyed listening to it, even if I was slightly feverish as I was doing so.
But you're back, baby. You're back.
I'm back, and how are you?
I'm good, although bloody hell, I've been bitten by so many mosquitoes.
Oh no, really?
Oh, mate, I can't tell you. I get really paranoid about them anyway, because as soon as I just touch it or even look at it, it comes up in a big bump. And just around my room, you know, when like you can just hear the...
Yeah, it just comes back.
It's like, oh God, where is it? Just like smacking myself, hoping that I've got it.
You have to turn the light on and do battle with them.
Yeah. And I've been, I didn't want to put DEET on because I'd rather they get me than Carmen. So I've just been sacrificing myself to the, the devils.
And talking of Carmen, she did accompany us this week because we went out. We had a very, very busy podcast day on Thursday of this week, just gone. Oh, gotcha. And she came with us, didn't she? Because we did a little bit of an outside recording. for somewhere that is hopefully going to come up in a future podcast, assuming the wheel allows us, because we went to the Brunel Museum, didn't we?
Oh, it was wonderful. Yeah, we got shown around the Brunel Museum by the lovely Catherine, who works there. And we did a little on-site interview.
We did, because of course we did the you did the fantastic story of the Thames Tunnel a couple of weeks ago, with the Brunels building this amazing tunnel, and they heard the podcast and got in touch and asked us to go down, which was great. So hopefully in the not too distant future we'll have an opportunity to play that on a future podcast, because we're hoping that we'll get a chance, we'll crowbar in the Brunels again at some point.
Yeah, exactly.
And they do have a little offer for our listeners as well, which we're going to tell you about when that happens.
They do. A good cheeky offer, actually.
Yeah. Yes. We've got you an exclusive, podcasts. which we're really excited about. And then we had a couple of chats, didn't we, with some people, including a rather exciting interview that we've got coming up.
Yeah, it was all go last week.
It really was, yeah. It really was.
Lots of fun stuff.
So we had an interview with a particular arm of the BBC to do with the podcast, which we think is out next week, but might be this week.
It's a Friday, isn't it?
It's going to be a Friday. They weren't 100% sure which one it was, but we think it's next week. So we're going to tell you a little bit more about that next week's podcast. But we have some exciting news coming up.
Ladies in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. But we're going to leave you in suspense with that just a little bit longer while we do this week's podcast.
This week's pod. And on that note, well, before we charge into this week's pod, we've got to talk about the crux points of last week's pod.
Yes, the podcast pedestal. And thanks so much for Fiona and Lottie. Actually, I was slightly worried when you said they could pick one together. They were going to come to blows over what they wanted to pick.
For a second. I was like, hang on a minute. Handle this?
But they're
very gracious and kind of merged both of their thoughts together.
Yeah. And so what did they pick? I'm going to let
They picked Emerging from the Darkness. which from what I remember is when it turned from we're just going to kind of open up this beefsteak club to right, we're really bloody serious about it and we're going to create some uniforms. So fantastic. That was theirs. Or yours
or mine. Yeah
And mine was the buttons, which had a little motif on each button of a grid iron, which, you know, I think just says so much about the details and the importance of the club.
Which was a great choice because it was so sort of visual. I could really see the gridiron buttons there. I thought it was fantastic, and I love the stories, and honestly the cheese in the beard and the oh, the silly hats, so, and oh my goodness, it was absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed it.
So if you were to choose, would you have gone, I mean, did you choose my buttons? Did you vote for me?
I didn't vote for either, actually. I probably should have voted for myself, shouldn't I? No, I didn't vote. I thought I would stay very impartial and keep out of that, even though I had skin in the game. But no, I didn't vote on that one. But I probably, what would I have picked? It was a very good choice, but I was struggling actually to think what I would have picked myself. So I'm happy with what they chose. Yeah.
Okay, good. So do you want to
break the results?
Quite
a split this week. Okay. 51.5% to 58.5%. Yeah. Which way do you think it's gone?
Well, actually, now I'm thinking of it, because it was Fiona and Lottie, maybe they kind of, I don't know, got
tag team the voting.
Tag team the voting. So,
well, they would not be so unprofessional, because you've won it this week.
Have I won it?
Yeah, you won it.
Yes.
She's coming back. She's back on the attack.
Yes. Oh, excellent. If I had buttons on my shirt, I would kiss them. I would kiss everyone of them.
So well done. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you very much, Alex.
A win for Emily. Wow. Very good choice. Excellent. So last week, when you spun the wheel in my absence, it landed, where did it land?
It landed in St James's.
Hmm. And what I think was very interesting is that I'd given you a whole list of stuff and you properly picked the hardest one on the entire list. And I put it on the list as a kind of, I really want to do this, but it's quite tough, so I'm going to leave it for a while. And then you picked it, threw me under the bus. But that's good. That's good. No. It forced me to kind of go and write it up, because it's something I'm super interested in, which are the sumptuary laws. This is something I'm quite fascinated by, historical fashion. I've done a couple of courses on it, forgotten it all immediately, but I still find it really interesting. And one of the things that I found really fascinating are the sumptuary laws, particularly the ones in the Elizabethan era. Do you know anything about this?
The only thing I know is what Fiona said last week, which she said it's colours and fabric and like all things material based, I'm gathering.
Yeah, well, actually, it's not exclusively material, but for the purposes of this, it is this week. So a sumptuary law is basically a law that was passed, and this is not exclusive to the UK, I should say. Sumptuary laws have been around since the Romans and have appeared in a variety of different countries across the world, including actually, I think at one point in America, right at the very start of everything being kind of colonised over there. But basically, it is a law which restricts certain products, clothing, food, a whole variety of stuff, depending on your social class.
Oh.
Yeah. And I find this hilarious because, of course, anyone who knows anything about England, about the UK, knows that one of the things that the Brits love more than anything, particularly in history, but still to this day in certain places, is kind of this obsession with class and where you are in the social hierarchy and where you belong and all this kind of thing. I couldn't care less about class, but I find it a fascinating obsession in a variety of different bits of history. I think it's really, really funny how much emphasis is put on it.
Absolutely.
And so these laws basically were brought in to say, you can't wear this, you can't eat that, you can't do that unless you are of this rank or that rank or whatever. And the first ones to be brought in actually go far beyond the Elizabethan. It was in the 1300s that the first sumptuary laws were brought in. And if you think about England in particular in this time, it's all the feudal system, right? This big pyramid of, you know, the king and the nobles and all the rich chaps at the top of this pyramid. And at the bottom, you've got all the peasants and the workers and the serfs and, you know, all of that at the bottom of this giant pyramid. And they're all working and making money, which then sort of trickles up the pyramid all the way to the top. So one of the things that they, you know, everyone knew their place in the feudal system. One of the things that they would know very, very easily is what class you are and therefore where you are and what kind of rights you have. And if you need to look at somebody and figure out what class they are, because of course that's incredibly important, is to look at somebody and go, oh, you're a rich one or you're a poor one. How are you going to do that on first sight? Well, one of the ways is literally by looking at them and looking at what they're wearing. And so we see the first kind of laws coming in to basically control the different types of fabric that you can wear. And in this, in the 13, 1400s, there's a massive increase in Europe in wealth, in the social classes. So there are the middle and lower middle classes, and particularly kind of artisans and merchants. And this huge kind of merchant economy starts building. Gold is coming into a country based on the trade. And if you are exporting loads of finished things, fabric, cloth, whatever it might be you're exporting, the more gold is coming into the country. So the more gold is coming in, the more expensive, or the richer these people are getting, the more they can afford, very simply. We get to the Black Death in the 1300s. Populations, I'm sure you're aware, you know, Black Death is pretty devastating for the population of Europe, and the population goes massively down. So property starts to move around. But what it also means is that the peasants and all the people at the bottom of the tree, there's a lot fewer of them in that bottom of the pyramid. So wages are going to rise because people are going to start realising they've got options. They can therefore earn more. And previously kind of bonded labourers are suddenly more free and they're making more money. So we start to see a little bit of kind of upward mobility and people having more money to be able to buy stuff. How do you reckon this is going to go down with the nobles and the aristocracy?
Well, they're not going to be happy about it, because if they're, you know, walking down the street and suddenly Pat, who's usually wearing, you know, some curtains,
Pat Butcher
trousers, yeah, let's say Pat Butcher, is suddenly, you know, walking down with a little bit of ermine fur because she can now afford it, they're not going to be too happy, are they?
Exactly. And in fact, they're going to be more than not happy. They're going to be pretty damn peeved, because, of course, that's all their right. You know, it's their right to dress fabulously and all this kind of thing. So what happens is that Henry VIII, Queen Elizabeth I's father, very famously, he decides this massive big merchant class is growing and people are kind of aiming for upward social mobility. And he goes, right, I need to make a distinction here. I want these lower levels to know their place. And he got his knickers in a bit of a twist. I don't know what fabric the knickers were, but still. And he, you know, whatever, probably silk and gold and all that. Yeah. And he updates these original laws to take this into consideration, as his daughter Mary the First does. And then his daughter Elizabeth the First properly goes big on this. So this is where we see the Elizabethan sumptuary laws. So what do they do? So the law, it kind of, it's a Latin phrase, the sumptuary bit, and the law dictionary describes them as laws that are made for the purpose of restraining luxury or extravagance, particularly against inordinate expenses for apparel, food and furniture, etc. So, you know, only certain people can buy from John Lewis, basically, is kind of what they're saying.
Right.
Of course, that the headline of this law, if you were actually to say, oh, we're bringing this in so that you we keep you lot in your place so that you know where you are, that's not going to go down very well. So they have other reasons why they're bringing in these laws. What kind of other reasons do you imagine they could bring in for these laws to come?
I don't know, because what would make you be completely okay with the fact that, you know, there's basically this box and we're going to keep the same kind of people like you in this box? Could it be like-minded people so that you have the same kind of things to talk about?
Yeah, there's a bit of that, of sort of being able to kind of be able to then mix with the right people of your standing and therefore not sort of stand out or be, you know, that kind of thing as well. There's an element of that. They also, one of them is they say, oh, we're protecting you. This is an aim of protecting the people. We don't want people to kind of overindulge in fine clothes. You need to live within your means. So we don't want you to kind of overstretch your finances, basically.
Oh, I see.
It's almost a little bit
like we're looking after you in terms of, like, you know, you're not going to go crazy. You're not going to suddenly go, oh, it's Saturday, let's do a big shop, because this is how far you can go.
Exactly. Mm. So, you know, don't kind of overspend and lead yourself into rack and ruin and all of that stuff. But they also, one thing that Elizabeth really wants to do as well is to try and curtail a little bit of trade coming in from abroad. She wants people to buy from England. So she wants homemade cloth to be bought. She wants all the stuff that is going to boost the English economy. She wants people to be buying. And so as a result, all the fine stuff, the silks, the taffetas, all of this kind of thing, which are coming in, particularly dyed fabrics, coming in from Europe, that means that they're getting the business, aren't they? We're not getting the business.
Mm.
So there's a few reasons that kind of go into all of this. And one of the things is in during Henry's reign, a couple of countries, France, Holland, Germany in particular, they've started growing plants specifically for dyeing fabrics.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so by saying, you know, you're not allowed to buy imported stuff unless you're above a certain rank, means that they're kind of controlling that trade of that thing. And they're therefore not making France, Holland, Germany, other places richer, because of course we might have to fight them at some point. We don't want them to be richer than we do. So there's a lot of kind of self-preservation going on here. It's kind of bizarre.
Gosh, because I know that, was it Elizabeth who, you know, if you were wearing purple, then this was something that you couldn't do and you could potentially lose your head for it.
Absolutely. Purple is a very particular one. So one of the things that she does is she controls in these laws, and actually she brings in about 12 different laws over her reign, which is huge amount. She obviously just kept going, oh, and another thing. Oh, and hang on, what about your horses? Oh, and what about your ruffs? And like,
this one on as well.
Exactly. There's all these kind of extra bits, and she starts going, oh, hang on, what about the length of swords? And like, it literally is down to that kind of level.
Yeah.
And one of them is colours. And purple, there's a restriction on purple. The only people allowed to wear purple are close members of the royal family. So yeah, that is something that you can get into trouble for.
Say, you know, what would happen if you were to wear purple?
Well, something like purple would be pretty tricky, because purple is one of the reasons why purple is only for the royal family is the dye, the stuff that's used to dye it, is a really, really expensive dye. It comes from like a kind of mollusk, a sea creature that was found in one particular area in the Mediterranean. And it needed something ridiculous, like 90 of the shells to make one tiny little amount, you know, so huge amount of money.
Oh, God.
So realistically, normal people, that's almost like a self-policing one, because normal folk at the bottom just wouldn't be able to afford it.
Can you imagine? I'm like, you know, like Willy Wonka, where he suddenly gets home and he opens the chocolate bar and there's this golden ticket.
Yeah.
You know, suddenly, like, for whatever reason, somebody's found, like, I don't know, like a purple shoe, or, you know, someone's dropped a little bit of purple fabric, and it's like,
All saluted, I know.
Put it in the middle of the table.
Ah. Yeah, I mean, you just wouldn't be able to do it. And yeah, if you wore that to court, I mean, in theory, you probably could possibly be executed. I think realistically, it doesn't seem that ever really happened that much. You could get fined and things like this. But really, you know, if you're in court with the Queen, you're not going to wear purple. Because that's the rule, and she's going to see it.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's, in theory, yes, you could, but realistically, not quite so much. One of the things, I want to read you just a little section. So the actual statutes, you can read them online, and they're really in-depth and really quite bizarre. And the amount of sort of wording in there is so incredibly detailed. It's hilarious. But I want to read you just a little bit of it to give you a sense of the kind of language that's being used. So it says, the excess of apparel and the superfluity of unnecessary foreign wares, thereto belonging now of late years, is grown by sufferance to such an extremity that the manifest decay of the whole realm generally is likely to follow. So basically, the fact that all of these countries are doing amazing things with dyes and fabrics, we're importing them. It's going to ruin the entire country.
That is ridiculous.
I know. And she also goes on to say, but also particularly the wasting and undoing of a great number of young gentlemen. So she's kind of saying these lads are going out and spending much more than they can afford on fabrics. Therefore, we're putting this in place and we're basically helping you to help. You know, we're helping you to help us help you kind of thing.
God, it's, you know, if there was such a hoo-ha in Parliament about fabric, about what you wear on your own back, it'd be so mental today, wouldn't it?
But I know. God. But I mean, I suppose there is still that thing, you know, you go to Parliament and there are certain things you wear and certain things you can't wear. And, you know, there is still an element.
There
is
still a bit of an etiquette when it comes to wearing.
Yeah, I mean, to a whole variety of places. I mean, there's not legally enforceable, maybe, but I mean, I don't know about the House of Commons or House of Lords. I don't think you're allowed to wear denim in there. I think that's whether that's legally enforceable, I'm not sure.
Yes, but gosh, I mean, that is a quote and a half, isn't it? That's almost like, you know, we will fight them on the beaches.
It's kind of, yeah.
It's got that element, isn't it, behind it?
We will fight them in the breaches.
I love it.
So yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's just interesting that this is in law about what you can and can't wear. And there's all sorts of different dyes. So you've got purple dye, kind of the rich, deep indigo dye as well, which just comes in from India. You've got... I don't even know about the red dye, the cochineal beetle.
Was that from coral?
No, it's from little beetles, but there is a coral as well that does, I think, a slightly more orangey one. But the cochineal beetle, where literally you would collect the beetles up and grind them down, and that makes your really bright red, the cochineal red. It's insects. There's saffron as well that's used for dyeing. And of course, we know saffron is still really expensive now. So it gives you a kind of sense of this sort of thing. So these laws are vast and really quite hilarious. And there's about, they break it down into kind of seven different categories, social categories and this kind of thing. So there are so many different options, but I want to run you through a couple of different bits and pieces. And of course, there are men and women, different rules for both of them. But for men, so I said purple is mainly for the royal family and close relations. Occasionally, a duke or a marquis, although often they are actually related as well, they can have some... bits of their outfit can be purple, not the whole thing, but like things like your jerkin or your hose, possibly. And the same for gold. So gold, silver, silk, all of this kind of thing. So upper class and aristocratic only. And there's also regulations on the size of the neck ruffs. Mm. Now, of course, famously, Elizabethan, you know, the Shakespeare era, the neck ruff is a big thing, and they're quite a fashion statement. So the size of these and other different, you know, bits of random fashionable attire are regulated as well.
I'm just thinking of Blackadder, you know, of Rowan Atkinson. There's when they have the Elizabethan era and they're all wearing their different size ruffs around their neck to show their status.
Exactly. And it kind of goes, you know, that's the way it goes. One of the things I love as well is... Elizabeth tries to kind of bolster the wool trade in England, because wool has always been a very important trade in England. And there is one day a week, Sundays and holidays, so high days and holidays, where any man over the age of 6 would have to wear a woolen hat.
Yes, I've heard that.
Or a woolen cap. The upper classes are exempt from that, but, you know, everybody else. So again, it's, you know, even if you're a poor serf or peasant, you've got to have your wool caps for Sundays. And I think that this is where we kind of get our, you know, idea of Sunday best and, you know, all the particular fancy attire for certain engagements and that sort of thing. Again, you know, things like velvet and fur are particularly reserved for the rich. And there's even laws on buttons and stockings and all kinds of things that are particularly for the people who are attending the Queen as well. Only knights and barons and men who hold a high rank in the Queen's court are allowed spurs, swords and daggers. So... you know, and there are stories as well, how true they are, but stories of, you know, young lads coming into London and having their swords measured before they come into London to make sure that they are of the requisite length, depending on their status. It's just hilarious. I think it's absolutely funny that they're...
To know exactly, you know, if somebody's walking in and they're holding a particular accessory or something, you know where to put them.
Yeah.
Because I guess, you know, if you think about people and what they wear today, as you said in Parliament, you know, we kind of have it where, you know, you see people... I don't know, wearing a baseball cap and holding a skateboard and, I don't know, certain kind of attires for different people.
Yeah. And even think about, you know, when you go for afternoon tea in certain places, there are dress codes. And this is kind of where it all comes from. You know that if you see somebody in a tuxedo, chances are they're probably not as likely to be working class as they are to be upper middle class or aristocracy. You know, if you're tootling around St. James in a tuxedo, it's that kind of thing. You can still... you know, make a little bit of a guess depending on what people are wearing. It's and it all kind of stems from this. There's also limits on how much people can spend on clothes as well.
So
aristocrats are allowed to spend a maximum of £100 a year, which is still quite a lot of money. But an ordinary person or kind of low ranking, maximum of £40 a year. So right there you are also saying, look, you know, you're not allowed to spend as much, you can't afford the expensive stuff anyway. So it's all these ways of just keeping people in the right zone. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah. So if they, I don't know, if they were able to get a little bit more money, I guess they wouldn't dare spend it on things that they know
Are
gonna make them stand out.
Yeah. And there are also certain times as well, there are limits on, you have to earn above this much in order to be able to spend this much, if that makes sense. So you've you know, you have to have an income of this amount in order to be able to spend the upper amount on clothes. So it's it's really controlled.
Were, like, you know, these kind of underground clubs where, you know, they say, look, you know, if you pay a couple of pennies, come in, I've got these, you know, beautiful ball gowns, you can put them on, you know, for the night.
That'd
and
amazing,
I won't
see
anybody. Or the opposite, you know, you could have someone with lots of wealth wanting to kind of feel what it's like to wear fabric that isn't expensive.
Yeah, but this is the thing, you know, you often hear in like Shakespeare plays and stuff, somebody goes, oh, I'm gonna disguise myself, and then they just put on a cloak, a bit kind of Superman-y, and like take your glasses off, and suddenly people don't know who they are. And actually, that to us, that's like, that's insane, that's mad, you can still see it's them. But realistically, it does make sense, because if you suddenly, if you're this kind of earl or whatever, and you're suddenly wearing a peasant's cloak, people just aren't going to look at you in the same way. They're going to look at you and go, he's a peasant, just on based on what he's wearing. So while it seems completely mad to us, it actually makes a little bit more sense.
Absolutely. And I'm just thinking of like paintings as well, you know, especially around that time in the 16th, 17th century, it's so easy to kind of see someone's status by the different clothes they're wearing, the different kind of fabrics and the colours as well, as you said, with the dyes.
Yeah, exactly. So for women, of course, there are rules as well. And generally, they are dressed according to the position of either their father or their husband, whoever owns them at that point in time. Wives and daughters of servants are not allowed to wear veils that cost more than 12 pence. If you are the wife of a kind of handicraft, like a you know, worker, somebody who you know, makes stuff, you're not allowed to wear silk veils. If you you're only allowed to wear fur if you're the wife of a knight, and the knight has to have a rental income above 200 marks a year. A mark wasn't actually a form of currency, but it was about 2/3 of a pound, so talking about 150 140 pounds a year. So again, you can only wear that fur if your husband earns over a certain amount per year.
It's just baffling, because
it's completely baffling
how they police this. I mean, you know, for someone to go up to somebody wearing a veil and saying, how much did your veil cost?
Yeah,
because it looks to me that it might have cost you, what, 14p instead of 12p.
Well, this is the thing, is that realistically, it's very hard to police. And what they haven't got is the fashion police going out there and arresting people with veils that look slightly more expensive. So realistically, it's not massively enforceable, because for a lot of it, the people, realistically, this is all made to control the middle classes, not the lower classes, because the lower classes can't afford all this stuff anyway. So for them, it's not so much a problem. It's more the middle classes and the people seeking to sort of rise. They want to make sure that there is that distinction between the nobility and the middle classes. Because, of course, if you are middle class and you are dressing the same way as the nobility, what the nobles are going to think is, hang on, I'm the boss around here. I'm the guy that tells you to pay me taxes, to go to war on my behalf. And if you look the same as me, I've kind of lost a little bit of that power. Yes, you know, you look absolutely to me for the power and the sort of the oomph. And if suddenly you're able to buy the same stuff as me and look the same as me, when I tell you to jump, you are not going to listen anymore.
Yeah, definitely. It puts them on a pedestal. It's massively. That pyramid effect, isn't it? They're right on the top.
Absolutely. So realistically, it's hard to police, but there are penalties for it. So you can be fined, and you can actually get quite a hefty fine. And it's not just for wearing the wrong thing, but if you are, say, a tailor or someone making hosiery or whatever, and you are contravening the regulations, so basically you are selling the wrong stuff to the wrong people, you can be fined as well. Right. If you are wearing the wrong thing, you can be fined anything up to about 200 marks. So that, again, is about £140 in old money. And people, tailors and things like that, who are selling the wrong stuff or making the wrong things, can be fined up to about £40, which, of course, is going to take a massive toll on your industry as well. If you can't pay that, or you don't want to pay that, then you are no longer allowed to work in your professions as a tailor. So realistically, they are going to sort of go with those laws as much as possible. But also, it's quite a good money-raising exercise, as much as it is for keeping everyone in line. It's quite a good way for the Elizabethan government and everybody to raise money, is to enforce fines for all of this.
It's bonkers, isn't it? Like, to open your wardrobe and think that there are a couple of items, because even, you know, the middle class, they might have, however they got it, you know, might have been a hand-me-down from a relative or something hanging in the wardrobe that they can't wear because they'd get in trouble and fined for.
Yeah. Do you imagine? You know, you sort of save up, buy yourself a nice leather jacket, and you're walking down the street and someone goes, excuse me, you are far too scummy to actually wear that. I'm going to chuck you in prison.
Yeah, exactly.
That'd be awful.
But I wonder if there was like a few people that were fantastic sewers, or just they might have had some really horrible fabric, but the way they put it together, they just look stunning and wore this dress. You know,
it would still be the quality of the fabric, though. It would still, you know, that's that would be and colours and things. So that would be fine, you know. And realistically, everybody is going to be sewing amazingly back then, because as well, fabric, when you make a dress or a garment back then, when the garment has, you know, been used to the sort of the extent of how it can be used, the fabric is reused. It's very much not a fast fashion thing that we're in now, where once it's sort of worn out, you chuck it away. They would fabric would actually be handed down as heirlooms generation to generation, and it can then be repurposed into things as and when it gets worn out. But a lot of these garments are very hard wearing, beautifully made, so people would be wearing dresses that'd be handed down, and at the point where the fabric became too thin in a certain area, that the garment would be taken apart and remade into something else. So you won't be having scraps of fabric going spare. You won't be having, like I do upstairs, a sort of a stash of fabric that I can make stuff out of. The fabric itself is as much important, is as important as the garment. So it's a really intriguing way of looking at fashion and all that sort of thing. So a really great way of sort of showing how some of the punishments could happen. One of the rules was that, in fact, I'm going to read it to you because it's quite specific. No Englishman other than the son and heir apparent of a knight, or he that hath yearly revenues of £20 or is worth in goods £200, shall wear silk in or upon his hat, cap, nightcap, scabbard, hose, shoes, or spur leathers. If he does, forfeiture of £10 for every day and imprisonment by 3 months. What? So if you're found like wearing any silk in any of those things, in your nightcap, for goodness sake.
I was going to say in your nightcap, where no one...
In your scabbard for your flipping sword.
Can you imagine being like, you know, having this kind of silky nightcap in the bottom drawer, just being like, It's Thursday night. I'm going to be a bit naughty.
Yeah, I know. And in comes the fashion police.
Like, get that silky cap off now.
I know that your yearly revenue is £19, not 20. Therefore,
yeah. Pay your pajamas. Get that.
Pay £10 a day, and be in prison for 3 months. I mean, that's crazy. Absolutely
that
crazy.
Really is.
But
I bet that silk felt damn good.
I mean, I bet it did. Or in the scabbard of your... I mean, the thing is also that the law also covered what you dressed your horses in as well.
Oh.
So you're going to dress your horses in certain things. I mean, it's really quite wide-ranging.
You know that the horses are a class as well. Poor bloody horses.
I know, poor horses being subject to the English class system, bless them. But as well as this, if you are a nobleman or, you know, of any standing and you have servants as well, the servants, what they do, can also come back onto you as well. So if you have a servant that is not abiding by the rules, and you know that, we have to fire him within 14 days, and you're not allowed to rehire him within a year. And if you do, you have to pay £100.
What has the servant done?
So if the servant has gone against the sumptuary laws, if he's worn something, then he's not supposed to.
It's a bit like the tailor. So if you keep him on and you don't fire him within 14 days, get in trouble.
Yes, and he will as well, but you'll have to end up firing him, and you're not allowed to take him back for a year.
God,
I know.
Really sorry about this, but you can't wear those shoes, so you're gonna have to hop it.
I've noticed you've got a bit of silk in your scabbard. How about you, young man? And there's a couple of really good examples of men who went against this dress code. In 1565, there was a guy called Richard Wallane. It's a bit of a weird spelling. I'm not quite sure how you say the name, but I'm going to go for Wallane. And he was detained for, and get this, I love this phrasing, a very monstrous and outrageous great pair of hose.
Oh my gosh, what on earth did those trousers look like?
This monstrous. Is it, we don't know. We don't know. They didn't actually, the record of it doesn't say what they found particularly outrageous or monstrous about.
I wonder if he
had
like his bottom, like, you know, two circles cut out.
That would have been brilliant.
Yeah, be like, there's a lack of fabric, you're fined.
But there is a historian who reckons that she might have an idea what it was. So she reckons that he might have padded his calves. Do you know about this?
Ooh, padded his calves.
Yeah.
My mind immediately goes to RuPaul's Drag Race. in their trousers.
I mean, it's not a million miles away. So for the best part of... probably 300 years or so, it's kind of 1500s through to 17 somethings, the sexiest part of a man's body was considered to be a shapely calf. You know, whenever you see those portraits of Henry VIII and all of his ilk, and they're standing there, they've got one foot out to the right, and you can see the bend of their calf.
Yes, and they've got, yes, because their breeches, their hosiery. Yeah,
exactly.
Is it hosiery?
It's their hose, yeah.
Their hose goes up to the knee, doesn't it? Yeah. And then, as you say, it exposes that.
Hello, ladies.
Hello, calf.
And so you could pad your calves to give you, I mean, a bit like you say, RuPaul's Drag Race, the kind of chicken fillets in the bra type thing,
but in
your calves.
But
only if you are a certain rank. So if you were a servant or somebody who's considered a bit, you know, of the meaner or lowlier ranks, you're not allowed to. But if you are. If you are higher up, then you are allowed to. And this chap, it would seem, may not have been of the right level in order to pad his calves. No. He was obviously thinking, I feel like I'm going to get lucky. I'm going to do a little bit of cheeky calf padding. And somebody went, wait a minute, you're far too scummy for that.
I'm just going to bend down here for a second and give your calf a good old poke. Yep, that's definitely got padding. That is not you.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the amount you could pad them also was regulated. I mean, it's hilarious. But yeah, he was arrested, and I don't know if he had to pay a fine or not, that chap, but definitely did not go unnoticed. And in 1576, there was a chap who was sent to prison when it was discovered that, it doesn't say how they discovered it, but it says he was wearing a cut taffeta doublet and a great pair of Galligastian hose under his gown. Galligastian is like really kind of baggy and enormous.
Oh, okay. So they kind of go out to the side and then they come down.
Yeah.
What was the first thing you said?
A cut taffeta doublet. So taffeta is one of those very fancy fabrics. So he may not have passed muster for wearing the taffeta.
Whoa.
Yeah. And somebody else a few years later was presented in front of the Privy Council in what they described as an apparel unfit for his calling, with extreme great ruffs.
Extreme great ruffs.
And what they did is they fired him. They dismissed him from the Privy Council, and they recommended that he get fired as well. So, like, just wearing the wrong thing could get you fired, imprisoned, fined. It was literally a criminal offence to look good.
Just bonkers.
I know.
I love it.
I know. It's wonderful, isn't it? Now, there are a couple of get out of jail free clauses. And this is for people who, if there are certain things that you can get away with wearing stuff that you shouldn't be wearing. For example, if you are an earl or a duke and you've got servants who have a livery and your livery is a colour that theoretically they shouldn't be wearing, if it's part of the uniform you've given them, that's okay. If it is part of your sort of servant group and you need them to wear something specific, then you get a free pass for that. Also, one of the key ones to be exempt from this for certain things are actors, because if they are doing plays and they are depicting kings and all this on stage, they have to look the part.
Yes.
So for when they're acting, of course, you know, if they're on stage and we talk about Shakespeare and the fact that you have people sort of disguising themselves, that is going to mean a massive amount to people watching in that time. If you've got the king on stage in a purple gown who then changes into a normal, you know, that's going to have so much more of a big appeal. So actors for that kind of thing would be allowed, get out of jail free card.
Wow, I bet that was wonderful, you know, especially if you got the role as the queen. Or I
mean, wouldn't you feel fabulous?
Like, oh my God, my wardrobe.
Dressing above your station.
Wow, I love that.
It would be so, so good. Yeah. Now, the whole thing kind of falls apart when James the First comes in.
Oh, right.
Who comes in after Elizabeth. He basically, his first meeting after he gets the job as king, he sort of rescinds all of the different acts of apparel that had been instituted by Elizabeth and Mary and Henry. And we mustn't forget as well that for Elizabeth, she's a woman on the throne. And the first time that that's ever happened properly was her sister Mary before her. So this is a massive upheaval for the government, for, the monarchy, for everybody, that there's a woman on the throne. So for Elizabeth, it's yet another way of being able to assert her dominance as queen through fashion. Because as we know, for Elizabeth, the golden era, it's a really big era of all sorts of stuff happening. We've got arts and theatre and all this kind of thing. And fashion is one of them. So if you are then able to kind of restrict people due to fashion, it's just another way of being able to assert your dominance as a poor and feeble woman on the throne. But James doesn't need that. He kind of gets rid of it all. He's got other ways to prove himself as king, and he's a man, so he doesn't need quite as much as that. And then throughout the next couple of hundred years, the odd little law would come in, laws around sort of things like the right size of hats for apprentices doing things, and a lot of it is to do with importing goods from abroad, like Spanish leather and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But realistically, Elizabethan sumptuary is where it reaches its zenith, and you've got all this fabulous stuff going on. So there we go. That is a little bit. It's very, very complex, and there's an awful lot more to Elizabethan sumptuary than I've talked about. But I just think it's fascinating.
It is.
Ability to control a whole country and a whole class system by legally restricting colours, fabrics, all that sort of thing.
Yeah. And it's just that immediate visual aid of where that person sits. Where is their rank? Wow, I love that, Alex.
There we go.
Thank you so much. That was very visual, very very colourful, and I just can't stop thinking about that man with his padded calves.
I know.
Like, can you imagine if he pulled that night? Got hers.
Yeah.
And she's like, "You can take your tights off," and he's like, "Rather keep them on." And she's like, "Well, that's going to be a bit awkward.
I've got a few yards of fabric in my calves."
Tights come off, and suddenly,
but honestly, it will ruin you for looking at portraits of people in this era for a good few hundred years. When you look at them, and you'll see they're standing facing you, but there's one leg out to the right, and especially as the tunics kind of get shorter and shorter, you get more and more leg, and you sit there and you go. You'll see them and you'll go, "Oh, yeah, look at his calf." Whoa.
I'm going to have a good old
It will stare. Ruin portraits for you, I can tell you that now.
Protrude out like the handle of a cup.
Yeah. I mean, Henry VIII's portraits, he does have some very, very pronounced calves.
Mm.
Because, of course, you know, he's definitely got a little bit of PR going on about his virility. So
definitely, he definitely patted.
Tell you
one.
What about that?
Well, there you go. Thank you so much, Alex. That was
my pleasure. So it's a tricky one to talk about, but it's been on my list for a while. So actually, I'm quite glad that you picked it for me because I think it's really fun.
Yeah.
And when you start to look at things, at the fashion of that era, and you start to go, oh, yeah, look. It's amazing what it sort of reveals.
Yeah, and how it's kind of tumbled forward and you know, how we think of fashion. And I guess, like, I went to the Grosvenor Hotel years ago. I was, like, in my early 20s, and I got invited, and I thought, God, I'm going to be so out of place here. This is, you know, what the hell am I going to wear? And, like, I wore, like, this dress that I got from this charity shop, but I thought that it looked nice, and it was, like, quite nice fabric. And I felt so out of place because when I got there, the dress just did not, you know what I mean? When you put something on, you just feel like you shouldn't be there. And it's crazy, isn't it? Because, you know, it shouldn't matter. But I guess through time, where you are, you know, you have to wear certain things. And it's,
yeah, and it's kind of what you see, like, that reverberates down through into modern day, like you say. You know, you've got to wear the right thing at the right event, otherwise you do feel a bit out of place, or that thing of, oh, I'm overdressed, I'm underdressed, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, or trying to, like, you know, I was, like, faking it and thinking, you know, it's going to seem like I'm actually staying in one of the rooms, or, oh yes, I've been here a million times before. So you're, like, trying to put yourself in that box that is not you. But brilliant. Thank you, Alex. Yay. That was wonderful.
My pleasure.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Podcast pedestal.
So what are you going to go for for your podcast pedestal? It's a tricky one this week because there's not so many kind of actual things to have happened in there. But there's a couple of good bits and pieces that I think link into, you know, where all the rules come from.
I think I'm going to have to go for...
You're going to go padded calves.
The padded calves.
Yeah, I think that's a great one.
Were you going to go for that one?
Well, it was on my list. I actually quite like the whole woolen caps on Sundays.
Oh, yes, that is a good one.
I quite like that because I love that thing of going, there's, you know, it's multifold. It's, I'm telling you what to wear. You have to wear caps on a Sunday and on a holiday. That's it. That's the law. The upper echelons don't have to bother with it. And I'm doing it to try and bolster the wool industry in the country. So it goes in with all of
the mad,
all the different bits, all the mad rules and all the reasons why. Yeah. So I think I'm going to go for the woolen cap on Sundays.
That's a really good one. Especially, like, you know, because you can imagine being in a church on a Sunday in the summer, it's roasting and you've all got to wear these, like, woolly caps.
Well, you take your hat off in the church, of course.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But you'd still have to wear it on a Sunday. You know, and realistically, Sunday is your only day off as a worker. It's the only day you actually get off, and it's not really off. It's because you're going to Sunday service. And you're still being told what to do on that one day where you get a little bit more freedom.
Right. Well, there you go. Right. Yeah. So it's woolly cap for you.
Yep.
Padded calf for me.
Oh, sexy options. I love it.
Great. Oh,
there we go. Those are your choices, everybody.
Hashtag you can fight them on the breeches.
I like Sorry, it was an open goal. I had to go for it.
No, I took it.
Amazing.
Fab.
The Wheel of Destiny.
So, time for the wheel.
Time for the wheel. It's your choice next week.
It is.
Exciting.
I'm just going to go for Alex.
All right, give it a go.
Okay, here we go. And it's landed in Bloomsbury.
Bloomsbury again. Ooh.
Bloomsbury.
Quite a lot of stuff in Bloomsbury lately, haven't we?
Although I believe somebody put a request in for the Russell Square Hotel.
Yes, that was Hannah. who is one of my sort of online buddies, and she requested. She was walking through Russell Square the other day. Actually, it's not the Russell Hotel anymore. It's called the Kempton Fitzroy Hotel, I think.
Yeah.
And she requested a little bit of history on that. And there is some great history there.
Yeah.
So are you up for doing that one?
Yeah, I'm up for doing that. Because I think, you know, if anybody out there, if you've got anything that you want us to kind of talk about, then, yeah, please let us know.
And we have had a couple in this week of people giving us some things they want to talk about. So they've got on the list. And as soon as something comes up, we can chat about them.
Yeah.
We'll do it.
We'll do it, definitely. So, yeah, perfect. Let's do that. Challenge
brilliant. Challenge accepted. Cool. There we go, Hannah. And Hannah loves the phrase, new pants, please. So we're going to have to try and get that in there for her next week.
Oh, great. Oh, we'll get that in there. Don't worry.
Wonderful. Well, that's exciting. I'll look forward to that for next week. And hopefully next week we'll have some more information about what we've been up to with the BBC, which is rather exciting.
Oh, yes.
And don't forget that we do our blog. Every week we're doing a blog to accompany the podcast.
Yes.
So this week there will be some pictures of some some of these things on the blog on ladieswholondon.com. So do go and have a little look. And each week we're updating that for the podcast that's coming out that week. So go and enjoy on there as well.
Nice. I just want to say, if you can hear my baby in the background, I haven't just left her crying. My partner is with her. Just wanted to point out that.
Bless her. Bless her. Lovely. Well, I think that's it for this week. Thank you all for listening. Thank you for coming back.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for coming back, Alex.
Yeah, I'm still, like I said, I still can't quite laugh very well, but we're getting there. And hopefully next week we'll be back to fighting fit. But we'll see you all next week. Have a wonderful week. Take care, everyone.
Take care, guys.
Bye.